America and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host and host, Brandon Perkins. Joining you as always is Chris Sologi and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good people, folks.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey. All right, so this episode is going to be for November 11th, 2023. This week was election week. We had a bunch of fairly important elections that went through. Some voting happened. And the GOP got shellacked again.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be getting to all that because that's going to be a big chunk of this week's show. But we got some other stuff that I'll be talking about. There's that thing with the whole we're going to have another government shutdown in about a week. We got that happening. One of the most, I'm going to say, pernicious senators has announced that they will be not be running for re-election next year. The SAG-AFTRA strike is now over, and we'll be talking about the deal that they reached and everything. They basically got everything they wanted. We also know about, like, for example, Nintendo. They had their animated adaptation of Super Mario that was a massive box office success just internationally, and which ended up being a pretty fun movie, you know. Well, we now know that they're also going to be making another adaptation of one of their most famous properties. We'll be telling you about that. And then we've got just a crap ton of Netflix related stuff to talk about as well. Wow, there's just there is a lot of it. I think
they had another Geeked Week, which I don't understand the cadence of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like every quarter they're like, we'll just announce a bunch of stuff because we have that much stuff in the works.
Yeah. Yeah, but all you really need to know is that Arcane Season 2 is coming out next year. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So we're going to start this off as always traditionally, talking about all the things we've been doing leading up to today. Well, tonight, rather, when we're recording this. And as is tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
The big thing was voting.
Yep.
We'll talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I didn't have an opportunity to go early, so I was off that day, so I just went early, voted, and then I had some groceries to pick up, so I just did that afterwards, and then got some breakfast on the way home and vegged out until started getting numbers. So that was fun. But yeah, for things I've been doing, I've been watching a bunch of stuff. I went and saw The Marvels in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty fun. It's a good movie. In spite of what the mostly white, older male reviewers on Rotten Tomatoes had to say, people were complaining that they made a movie that appeals to teenage girls. And it's like, yeah, those people like movies too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's featuring three women, so
that's
not an impossible thing. But yeah, it's a very fun movie, kind of following up a lot of the stuff that's been going on with Captain Marvel since the first movie. You know, it's obviously like 30 years later. So she has been out in space, you know, protecting various planets and civilizations. But some weird shit happens. These parts of the like space jump system are acting weird. And so as this happens, you know, she goes and investigates. And at the same time, Monica Rambeau, as part of the Saber ship with Nick Fury, she decides to go investigate. And I guess this is how she usually gets powers. Is she? There's weird shit happening, and she goes to deal with it without any protection, and you know, gets zapped by whatever and gets powers. So that all happens in the Marvel heroes, as far as Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and Monica Rambeau, all kind of become entangled and. For a good part of the movie, they every time they use their powers, they swap places at the same if they're using it at the same time. And they come with some fun ways to team up and use that all together once they figure out what the hell's going on. So it's fun. There is some fun stuff at the end leading into other Marvel stuff that'll happen. So I'm curious to see how that happens. But things are moving finally. And in that same vein, I watched, I rewatched the first Captain Marvel just to remind myself what was going on with that character and all that. But I also watched Secret Invasion because I had missed that over the summer. Mm. And that was fine. It's nothing. Storyline-wise, I don't know where it's at. It's old Nick Fury, where he's got a big bushy gray beard.
Yeah.
As he has come back down from his spaceship, his extended time in space, dealing with the consequences of his inaction as far as the Skrulls are concerned, because he, you know, promised to help them find a new homeland. And that hasn't happened, you know, since he promised in the first Captain Marvel movie that he would help him. Mm-hmm. And it's like 30 years, and it's like, unsurprising. Some of them were not happy to be still on Earth and kind of having to lead secret lives and sort and such. And so they start becoming unruly, taking, you know, the place of various important people around the world and governments and such, and all kinds of conspiracy stuff happens.
Yep.
But unlike the, at least what I recall of the comics, there are no major heroes in this because economics wise, they're not paying to have, you know, any of them come in and potentially be swapped out for Skrulls.
Yeah.
Or anything. Like the biggest of the heroes is Rhodes, or War Machine, as you might see, but he's not even in the suit. He's just in his military outfit as like a central part of the president's administration, I guess. So yeah, it's more of a political thriller kind of thing. And it's fine. It's just, it's fine. Nothing really too amazing there, but yeah, it seems so late in the storyline that the overall MCU storyline, it's like, okay, I don't know when this is going to matter at all. But yeah, that's Secret Invasion. I'll probably watch Loki here in the near future, since now it's over. It's full. Mm-hmm. All the episodes are out. So there's that. Been watching more Columbo. I'm in season 7. Watched an episode that had Kim Cattrall in it.
Mm-hmm.
As a young woman who's like a college-age woman who is living with this dude, this older dude whose wife died and all that, and he comes with up with an interesting way to kill his best friend that he probably knew was cheating on his wife before she died, or cheating with his wife. And that's fun, especially because he's a big movie buff of sorts and has a bunch of that kind of stuff that I assume they must have just had on the movie lot and filled up the house with all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's neat. And the last thing I've been watching is My Hero Academia. I have watched all of the episodes they have dubbed into, like, episode 127, something like that. That kind of finishes up the big conflict that's going on. So that's interesting place to stop. I think they'll have some more episodes here by like the 20th, so I'll be able to keep watching whatever else they have available, maybe what's left of the season. But liking that a lot. They've effectively at this point kind of laid out as much of what the game plan with the all for one and one for all powers. So laid out, you know, Deku's skill tree of sorts. So that's fun. Excited to watch more of that.
Yeah.
Kind of looking at other anime to watch for the time being. I watched a little bit of Spy Family. I watched like 2 episodes. I don't have too much to say other than it's just a very weird start to that whole anime, if you know anything about it. Where a spy has a big job that he's trying to work on, and in the process sets him, you know, has to like have the appearance of being like a father figure of sorts. So he adopts a kid that ends up having telepathy unbeknownst to him. And she's very cool with it, finding out he's a spy because she likes, her favorite show is a spy show kind of thing. And then trying to get her into a big school. That'll be part of his plan. And she gets in, but they need to have an interview with both parents. So he's like, well, shit, I need to get a fake wife. and ends up running into an assassin who is similarly trying to fake being a normal person with a, you know, relationships and that kind of stuff. So that's kind of a fun whole thing there, but that seems neat. I'll probably keep watching that for things, but I'm also dipping in back into Yu Yu Hakusho because of the Netflix teaser trailer. I was like, I need to go back and continue on wherever I'm at. So I'm in the middle of the first tournament. So there's that for watching stuff. For what I've been playing, I've been playing some more Rocket League. They have a new big crossover with Cars, the Pixar movies, with Lightning McQueen being the big car you can pay for in the item shop, which is cool. The bad part of it is that for player anthems that you can get, they have the Rascal Flatts version of Life is a Highway, and that version is terrible. I hate it. Oh. I literally block anybody that has that on. Because that's just it's one of the worst things Ohio has done in the last like 20 years, is let them become popular.
I agree with you.
I'd rather have just the classic song, but you're not going to do that when you got the Cars tie-in. So, but I'm sitting here with my Never Gonna Give You Up anthem, which is a classy song. So yeah, that's Rocket League. Been just playing more of that. I might buy the car itself. They sell it separately for like $15. It's a little bit much for something I don't think I can do too much customization with. That's the only downside of these licensed cars, is they're typically, you can't do any weird things with them, but I may still buy it. And yeah, the other thing I've been doing is playing Ass Games, which, if you don't know, Ass Games stands for Auto Shooting Survival Games. It's a term that Jeff Gerstmann came up for the vampire survivors genre that I like. And so I've been playing some of those on my Steam Deck and on Steam itself. Yesterday I streamed a handful of games that I've been enjoying and trying to show them off a little bit. One is Halls of Torment, which is basically what if we did Vampire Survivors, but in the vein of a Diablo 2. Has that same kind of art style to it, and, you know, top-down isometric look, and kind of that kind of old PC game look to it that looks really nice and plays pretty well. But yeah, I'm finding some of these games I've been playing on my Steam Deck that I am understanding them a bit more when I'm playing them. One, playing them during the day when I'm not like half asleep and my brain's trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, having a full PC monitor screen with all the information that I can more easily read and understand what's going on, that kind of stuff. So that's been a bit better playing this stuff this way. So I'm maybe playing that a bit more on my Steam controller, which only has one analog stick on it. So that's maybe a genre that works pretty well on that. But yeah, there's Halls of Torment. There's Renfield Bring Your Own Blood, which is based on the movie that came out earlier this year, featuring Nicholas Holt's character, Renfield. There's no Nick Cage Dracula in it. Dracula might be in it, but not the Nick Cage version of it. But they've been adding a bunch of content to this game. I think even one of the big updates, maybe the 1.0 update, added a bunch of characters from the movie in there. I think Ben Schwartz's character is in there, Mina Harker, like a bunch of characters from there. That's pretty good to see. But I'm not good at this game at all, so I'm slowly unlocking stuff. But it's that one's more arcadey oriented, where you're going through like a maze-like structure of rooms as you're trying to ultimately get to a point where you save an innocent person or harvest them for whatever bonuses you get out of that. So you're going to these different rooms, killing all the enemies in them, and then having, you know, certain doors go to other rooms kind of thing as you're kind of working your way through this entire area. Mostly I've been going like 3 or 4 rooms in and getting killed, because it's really easy to take damage and not so easy to get it back. But I'm trying to build up my stats and such. So it's a more challenging game than any of these other ones I've played. So that's interesting. The other one I've been playing on Steam is Soulstone Survivors. This one came out a while ago. I just got it on sale. There's a sale for Bullet Hell Games, which includes all of these kind of games. So if you're interested in any of that stuff, they're a bit cheaper. But Soulstone Survivors is one of these, but it's more manageable. Like beating a stage is like 10 to 15 minutes versus like 30 for Vampire Survivors. But the meta part of the game is full of various currencies and crafting and skill trees and all this stuff. They go nuts on that part of it, which is interesting. So that's a game where, like, right now it has 256 achievements. And I have like 17 just from playing for like 90 minutes. So that's why I'm digging into it. But you're leveling up like characters, each character, and they each have their own different skill trees to invest into and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is a lot to a game. There's some of these games where they're just more focused on the overall upgrade stuff for all characters, or they're very minutia upgrade stuff like this one. And so this is one of those. The other one I showed off on the stream is a game called Hack and Slash Heroes, which is terrible. I only have it on my PlayStation because it was like a dollar on sale. It has like 6 or 8 characters in it. A few of them are broken or just terrible. It has only 3 maps with which they have a hard mode version of them, where you have to survive longer with like more enemies that spawn. It does a terrible job of telling you how to evolve weapons, so much so I think the PS4 version doesn't have a screen on it that the PS5 version does that tells you how to do the evolutions. So I was very confused how you do that. And then, whatever, it's an okay game in a sea of a lot of games that are much more interesting and more fulfilling. So I'm only playing that because I want to, like, I only play that on the stream because I wanted to show it off how bad it is and warn people not to bother with it. I ended up looking at the Steam reviews and they had like 7 and they were all negative. So I was like, all right, I got to check this game out.
Yeah.
Because usually there's a mix of good and bad ones, even on the worst games. This is like, these are all bad. So I got to see why it is as bad that nobody has said it's okay. Or done a meme review that says it's good. You know, where they just put ASCII pictures or whatever dumb shit people do. And then, so that's been everything I've been doing. So, Teresa, what have you been doing?
Yeah, Teresa, what about you?
Well, playing my usual stuff, which does include Vampire Survivor, Kingdom, and now Suika Game, apparently. Cross kind of's in there, but that's more of a, like, you know, you put it down for 2 or 3 months and come back to it.
Have you gotten the new Kingdom game? 80s?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, it just, I've played it and it's interesting, but I haven't even finished one game of it. Like, yeah, one round of it. It didn't grab me. I'm playing Kingdom Two Crowns in co-op right now.
Yeah, so I think that one's more solo oriented. It's more, yeah, it's easier to beat. So like, that's a nice thing about it. It's also cheaper than the others, I think. So they just added a remix mode or something like that based on like remix tapes. So it'll shake things up a little bit for more arcadey mode. That's neat. I like the style of it, though. The dumpster thing where you go into like a siege mode, I didn't realize you could go the other way, that they just flip it around. I just figured it goes one direction and I was like, well, that sucks. I kind of wish you could turn it around. And I realized like, oh, you just go the other way. It just didn't tell you that. It always points you the way that you would finish the level.
Yeah, so the whole dumpster thing is kind of weird, too. It's like, I don't remember doing that in the 80s.
Yeah. But you get that nerd kid and you just build up the tower things and you're kind of invincible in that thing.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I do. Go and find his boombox, get him to help me out. Yeah. And I had some Nintendo points, so I got hole.io, which is, it's like Snake. All of the .io games are pretty much the same thing. And I played probably a ridiculous amount of that this weekend. Or, no, this week. like an idiot, I bought the DLC. But like I said, I had a lot of Nintendo points. And they're going to expire in, like, February or something. So, might as well use them.
Use it for the shit you don't want to actually pay money for.
Yes. Yes.
Or the stuff you do. Whatever. Whatever fancies you at the moment.
Speaking of paying money for something, I did take advantage of a Black Friday sale. Target had buy two, get one free of selected games. And I found a couple of PS5 games, a couple of Switch games and one PS5 game. And I won't say what they are because they're for people who are in the room. And one of them's for my cousin's kid. That one, I'll tell you, is the Hot Wheels 2, which, I mean, the first one was pretty fun from what I heard.
Yeah, it's a very long name.
Yeah, right. So I think that he'll be just absolutely thrilled to get that because he's about 7. So I think that that's probably right about there for that audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. But really, I've just been watching a lot of stuff. Definitely watching all the late night hosts with their commentary because this Trump trial is just the civil trial. One of the many trials. is interesting. I'm enjoying the popcorn on this one. Which reminds me, I think Saturday Night Live starts up pretty soon too, so I'm gonna have to see if they have any takes on that. Definitely enjoying a lot of that. I mean, you know, after what we've been through, can you guys blame me for trying to find a little bit of justice? I've been watching various weird stuff. But so, Columbo, are you watching like the old Columbo, or is there a new one?
No, this is the classic stuff.
Okay, yes, yeah, we've been digging in and going back to some classic stuff. MXC. I didn't want to watch the new Frasier, so we started rewatching old Frasier. You know that kind of stuff. You guys know The Weeknd is The Weeknd, right? And this is probably a classic me thing. I don't know why when I was watching, I was watching Harold and Kumar, go to White Castle last night. And I'm like, you know what I'm going to do tomorrow? I'm going to get up, I'm going to smoke something, and I'm going to sit down and watch She-Ra, the original. So then I can go and watch the new one. And I did. And it was fun. I made it partway through the first story arc. And that brings me up to what I've been doing all the way up to today. So it's pretty much me. Yeah, you got to enjoy the weekend, right? What are you doing, yeah, Brandon?
Well, as for me, my gaming has largely been, at least for this week, has largely been divided between two different games. The first one, both of which could not be more different from each other, to be honest. The first one is Alan Wake 2. I played the remastered version of the first Alan Wake game, and I absolutely loved it in spite of the fact that they had remastered the graphics. The animations were still the ones they used in the original game, and it has not aged very well, but everything else about that game was amazing. I loved the hell out of it. And of course, before I played that, I'd also played Control, which was the other game by Remedy that ends up kind of not only taking place in the Alan Wake universe, but kind of ties the universes of all their games together, more or less. Because the thing about the Alan Wake series is Alan Wake himself, the character of Alan Wake, is basically a successful author. And his most successful works are a series of crime thrillers that star a character named Alex Casey. And when you start to look into the Alex Casey character, you start to realize that he's basically Max Payne. just straight up. His backstory is the same. The way he talks is the same. You know, And, you know, so it's like the game makes the connection for you, more or less. But the thing about Alan Wake, the game, is it's sort of like well, the first game, at least, is very heavy on like having influence from like Twin Peaks, because it takes place in like a weird sort of, you know, town in the Pacific Northwest, you know, in Washington, where there's lots of logging involved and there's like a heavy immigrant influence. In this case, it's a lot of Finnish, you know, Finland in influence because, well, you know where Remedy is from. there's like a bunch of weird people in the town, you know, again, like with Twin Peaks. But the difference is that, you know, they unlike what Twin Peaks does, at least in its first season, this game goes heavy into the supernatural stuff pretty early, where you find out that there's this this weird sort of presence that lives at the bottom of this thing, of this place called Cauldron Lake, in the middle of this town. And basically, to make a long story short, by the end of the first Alan Wake game, Alan is trapped at the bottom of it because he's trying to save his wife from being trapped inside there. So he kind of sacrifices himself to be trapped inside there. And now he has basically been trapped down there for about 13 years. And one of the things about the presence and what's quote-unquote called the dark place down there is that Alan has this weird ability where he can essentially, because he's an author, he finds out that he can write his way into manipulating the dark place in ways that will, that can perhaps be beneficial to him. But the problem is, every time he does it, the dark presence that lives down there has found ways to manipulate it to work it against him. And because of that, Alan has basically been trapped at the bottom of Cauldron Lake for about 13 years by the time Alan Wake 2 started. So what ends up happening is you're not playing Alan Wake for the beginning of the story. Instead, you are playing this woman named Saga, who is a FBI agent who has been sent to Bright Falls, which is the location of the first game, to investigate a series of murders by what originally she thinks is involved with a serial killer. She finds out is actually being carried out by this weird cult, calling themselves the Cult of the Tree, which is like this sort of like weird like urban legend that people used to tell in Bright Falls to keep kids from wandering off into the woods. She goes down there with her partner, Alex Casey. Yes, the same name, and that will become relevant. And she finds this guy named Nightingale, who was he was actually in the first game. He was a ATF agent who apparently fell off and went nuts and became convinced that Alan Wake was personally out to get him. And he ends up getting influenced by the dark presence. And basically, he got trapped down in the bottom of Cauldron Lake for a while until he manages to crawl back out in the beginning of the game, only to then be killed and sacrificed by the Cult of the Tree. And it's not subtle either. They literally cut his heart out of his chest. And you're pretty much there to watch the whole process go through it. But essentially, like, that's how the game starts. Saga gets to Bright Falls, and the local deputies take her to look at the body. And basically, it's sort of, the game still has, like, a lot of sort of the same mechanics that the first game had, where, like, the combat is based around having to fight off these things that are essentially shadows. They're covered with like a shadow shield, and you have to use a flashlight in order to get the shadow off of them, or either that or like road flares or flash grenades, basically anything you can do that'll make a bunch of light, and then you can attack. But they've added some additional things to this game as well. First and foremost is the addition of a headroom, essentially. For Saga, it's a headroom that's meant to be an area where she can sort of put up all the facts of the case as she's going through it and sort of, you know, making connections. It's like she's got what's called the case wall, where she can like put up like pictures and notes and pieces of evidence and stuff and connect them with some red string so she can figure out what's going on in this case and everyone who's involved. Alan's part of the game, however, has something similar where he's in what's called the writer's room, which is basically the place he's been stuck in for the last 13 years. And what happens is he finds out that he can go out into a version of the dark place that's meant to look a lot like Midtown Manhattan. And he is able to use his ability as a writer to sort of manipulate all the stuff happening around him. So he can use what's called the storyboard, which is like it's exactly what it says. It's a storyboard, like for you're writing a book or a movie or whatever. And he can use like various plot inspiration he gets. And when he gets to like a certain labeled area, he can put that bit of plot inspiration onto the area he's in, and it will completely change the environment. There's like a whole part where he's like in the subway tunnels, and he finds out that he can like manipulate ways to, he can like open up areas that previously weren't there, or figure out things about the world he's in. For example, some of the like quote unquote inspiration he's got is like for the cult, for example, which in this case, instead of being called the cult of the tree, it's called the cult of the word, because apparently there's like this weird cult that's convinced they can bring Alex Wake back from the dead by sacrificing people. And he gets to like a collapsed tunnel. And when he gets to collapsed tunnel, he can go to the storyboard and he can put the cult of the word inspiration in there, and it will change it so that it now looks like a altar, basically, with like one of his books on an altar piece opened up. There's also like another one where he gets to like a overturned subway car, and he can put in a piece of inspiration called Torchbearer, which is about like a story idea for like a spirit of someone who's trying to seek revenge for a bunch of people who died in a subway fire. And what he ends up doing is it lets him go through the overturned subway car to get to the other side. But in the process, what happens is that when the door opens, he goes in there and he ends up seeing the burned and charred corpses of all the victims of the fire. This game isn't really subtle, but damn, is it good? Like really, really good. A lot of fun, highly recommend it. Though I will tell you, you need to play the first game for any of this to make sense. Like it just, yeah, no joke. And of course the other game I'm playing is Thirsty Suitors, which could not be more different. Yeah, and I know Chris has played this, but basically Thirsty Suitors is this, I don't really know what to call it. It's like an adventure RPG game. You're playing this girl who is Indian American. She's Indian, her part Indian, part Sri Lankan. Her dad is Sri Lankan. And she's coming back to her hometown in Washington after a three-year absence, after she ran off with this woman that was 10 years her senior, who convinced her to cut her off from all her family. And now she's coming back and trying to make amends. The problem is she basically burned like a bunch of bridges before she left. And so pretty much nobody is happy to see her come back. And so now she's basically trying to rebuild all of these relationships that she broke when she left. And what's funny is the way they do this. See, she's a skateboarder, and you know, a lot of the game's sort of navigation involves you skateboarding everywhere and doing tricks and stuff, Tony Hawk style. But the actual like relationship rebuilding comes from RPG battles. No joke. Basically, she had, it's sort of like this thing where she has to go like a bunch to like all of her exes, more or less, you know, like that certain movie everybody remembers, who all of them are all like pissed at her because they all ended on rather bad terms, because she's, shall we say, kind of moody and doesn't really know how to settle for one person. And, you know, the person sort of leading this in most, honestly, her angriest ex, Tyler, who was also, you know, her best friend for years and years. Tyler is also a trans woman, which is part of the plot because, as it says in her backstory, you know, she was there for her entire transition, you know, for all the appointments and the hormonal swings and all that stuff. And then she just breaks up with her. So as you can imagine, she's kind of pissed. There's like this other girl named Vinya. Her name's not Vinya. It's Dia. Who I'm pretty sure is supposed to be, her family are supposed to be either French or like French Canadian. Cause she has a French accent. Also ended up having bad terms with. There's also Sergio, who was like her quote unquote boyfriend in third grade. And there's another guy. There's a bunch of them. Let's just put it that there. There's like six or seven of them. But she's also having to rebuild the relationship with her family, specifically her parents. At the time she showed up, it turns out, coincidentally, her sister, Aruni, is getting married in about a month. And on top of that, because her sister's getting married, and Aruni really is pissed off at her. She's like one of the main people you're trying to repair the relationship with because she just, you know, you left like in the middle of the night and told the family not to find you. And so everybody's just angry with her. The big problem with this is that her grandmother is coming all the way from India. And her grandmother is one of Indian power ladies, you know, carries around a Prada bag, wears fine clothes, is constantly sending, you know, arranged marital proposals. Yeah, a lot of the enemies you fight in this game are basically suitors that her grandmother has sent to her trying to convince her for an arranged marriage. But yeah, it's actually a pretty fun game. There's a lot of like, you get like a really good look into like South Asian culture and everything. There's a lot of like cooking involved, which every time I play the game, it's like, man, I could really go for some Indian food right about now. But yeah, it's a good game. Really, other than that, just, you know, the usual books. I've been reading Daisy Jones and the Six by, what's her name? I forgot what her name is. Let me look it up real quick because I really feel stupid. Taylor Jenkins Reid. Yeah. You may remember this became like a Netflix series. Was it a Netflix series or was it an Amazon series? I can't remember. But yeah, it's basically a novel, fictional rock band in the 70s called Daisy Jones and the Six. It's very obviously inspired by Fleetwood Mac. Like Daisy Jones herself is obviously inspired by Stevie Nicks. The guitarist that she hooks up with is obviously supposed to be Lindsey Buckingham. The drummer is supposed to be Mick Fleetwood. It's just that instead of, you know, Mick Fleetwood being British, the band started out in Pennsylvania. And it's written like an oral history. So it's basically, the whole story is told through like interviews and quotes from like people that were involved in it. So like there's their official biographer starts it off, and then Daisy herself, her friend Simone, who was a disco singer, members of the band themselves, fans, managers, stuff like that. It's actually really fun, a really enjoyable read. And other than that, it's been kind of cold and well, today it's been cold and rainy. The thing is, this week is we went through that week where it's like the it wasn't really sure what season it was supposed to be yet. So it would be like really cold, but also like really humid at the same time. Yeah. where it would be like, yeah, it's like 53 degrees outside at night, but the atmosphere, the molecules are as thick as watermelons, so you're constantly gasping for breath. It's not fun. But yeah, that's about everything I got for this week. So do you guys want to add anything else before we move on?
Nope.
No? Alrighty then. Well, now it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So I wanted to ask you guys a question. Do you guys have anybody in your family who have ever had to deal with any kind of like brain damage? And I don't mean like in the hilarious colloquial sense. I mean like literal, like medically certified brain injuries.
Not definitively.
No. Okay. Or like any kind of like a mental impairment, things like that.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely. I know. Cause I know you have,
my uncle. Yeah.
Your uncle. And I do too. I think we pretty much all have, people in our family who suffer from that type of stuff. It can be either some sort of traumatic brain injury or born with some sort of, mental impairment, or, you know, they, you know, as they age, they start to develop like Alzheimer's or something like that. Yeah. The human brain is a very, it's a strange organ. And in many ways, with all the things we know about it today, we still don't really know a lot about it at all. And the brain is pretty much like the last organ in the body that can still sometimes perform serious miracles. You know, it's like people can live extremely long, very fulfilling lives without having entire parts of their brain. Like, you know, there have been stories of people who were born with like half a brain and living long, fulfilling lives.
Or, yeah, it's really odd, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the one organ in the body that still mystifies medical science, even though we've pretty much managed to map out the entire organ from start to finish. But the story I wanted to tell you about today is about one of those examples where a man suffered what should have been a really nasty brain injury that should have left him like a drooling vegetable. Not only survived to tell the story, but he kind of managed to turn his injury into a second job. So, okay, I'm going to tell you about the story, and this is a real story. His name is about a real gentleman who lived back in the 1800s. His name was Phineas Gage. Now, Phineas Gage was one of the men who made their living in the 1800s America by working on railroad construction. And, you know, this was back in the day when, you know, to make railroads, there was a lot of labor involved. You had to lay down track. You had to lay down the wood beams. You had to make sure that the area was clear for it to work. You had to make sure that the rails were, you know, put down nice and tight because, well, have you ever heard some trains called a snakehead before?
No.
When you're got a big giant piece of enormous moving steel and iron careening across an area that's just put up on rails day after day after day after day. Well, the thing about metal is that it tends to vibrate. And when metal tends to vibrate, that means it also tends to warp. And when it tends to warp, that means on very rare occasions, a piece of the rail will warp itself up and stick, and one end of it will stick up. And what happens when you have a giant piece of careening iron and metal that's going full speed down a railroad track when it comes in contact with a little piece of metal that has stuck itself up about, say, 3 or 4 feet up in the air? It basically tears the whole thing a new asshole. Yeah. So, yeah, being a railroad worker back in the day was serious business. And Gage happened to be one of those men that was. Now, Gage was part of a team that had one particular job, and that was tamping. Now, let me just pull this up because So they actually have like machines for this now. They're called tamping machines, ballast tampers. Basically, these are things that pack the track ballast under railway tracks. If you ever wonder what that is, that's the like gravelly stuff that's like underneath the railroad track. That's what that is. That's track ballast. It sort of provides like a cushion when the train is going so that, you know, it keeps the vibration under check. But back in the day, they didn't really have the machines to do all that. So instead, they had to do something called tamping. Now, what they did was they would like dig a really narrow about, a few feet deep. And when I say narrow, I mean like about like the width of like a, well, they literally had a piece of equipment for it. It was literally just a piece of metal, like a rail that was about 8 or 9 feet feet long and about, you know, a few meters in diameter. It was very, you know, you could just something you could just smack it into the earth over and over again to make a little hole. And then what you had to do is then you had to fill that hole with gunpowder. Then you had to put a fuse into it, light the fuse, run away, and this would blow up a bunch of gravel in the air, and that would be your track ballast, basically. All right, following me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's one of these guys who is making one of these, and while he's doing this one day in September of 1848, he was out directing a work gang blasting rock while preparing the roadbed. Then after that was done, they would then, you know, add the powder and the fuse, and then they would use the tamping iron to sort of pack sand or clay or other stuff into the hole above the powder, contain the blast and whatever, you know? Okay, so like I said, remember, hole, you know, hole, gunpowder, fuse, tamping iron, stuff on top. With me so far? Okay. So, pop quiz. What happens when a piece of metal accidentally strikes something solid really, really hard?
Well, it's going to go moving, isn't it?
Well, that, but do you know what it produces?
Well, sound waves, usually.
Sound waves, yes, but also something else, like a spark.
Oh,
and
oh,
what
yeah,
happens
that would be
when
dangerous.
A spark hits gunpowder?
Good Lord.
It ignites. So, I'm just going to read the next part off of Wikipedia. I think it does this better justice than I could. All right. Are you ready? Mm. As Gage was doing this around 4:30 p.m., his attention was attracted by his men working behind him, looking over his right shoulder and inadvertently bringing his head into line with the blast hole and tamping iron. Gage opened his mouth to speak. In that same instant, the tamping iron sparked against a rock, and, possibly because the sand had been omitted, the powder exploded. The tamping iron rocketed from the hole, which was, and I need to remind you, this was about 1.25 inches in diameter, 3 feet 7 inches long, and weighing about 13.25 pounds, entered the left side of Gage's face in an upward direction, just forward of the angle of the cheekbone, continuing upward outside the upper jaw and possibly fracturing the cheekbone. It passed behind the left eye, through the left side of the brain, and then completely up the top of his skull through the frontal bone.
That's a traumatic brain injury for sure.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
The tamping iron then landed point first, some 80 feet away, smeared with blood and brain matter. Gage was thrown onto his back and gave some brief convulsions of the arms and legs, but spoke within a few minutes, walked with little assistance, and sat upright in an ox cart for the three-quarter mile ride to his lodgings in town. About 30 minutes after the accident, Physician Edward H. Williams found Gage sitting in a chair outside the hotel and was greeted with one of the great understatements of medical history. And this is directly from Dr. Williams himself. When I drove up, he said, "Doctor, here is business enough for you. I first noticed the wound upon the head before I alighted from my carriage, the pulsations of the brain being very distinct. The top of the head appeared somewhat like an inverted funnel, as if some wedge-shaped body had passed from below upward. Mr. Gage, during the time I was examining this wound, was relating the manner in which he was injured to the bystander. I did not believe Mr. Gage's statement at the time, but thought he was deceived. Mr. Gage persisted in saying that the bar went through his head. He got up and Mr. Gage then got up and vomited. The evidence pressed out about a half a teacup full of the brain through the exit hole at the top of the skull, which then fell upon the floor."
No.
Oh, it keeps going. So another gentleman by the name of Harlow took charge of the case around 6 p.m. And this is from him. "You'll excuse me for remarking here that the picture presented was one accustomed to military surgery, truly terrific. But the patient bore his sufferings with the most heroic firmness. He recognized me at once and said he hoped he was not much hurt. He seemed to be perfectly conscious, but was getting exhausted from the hemorrhaging. The person, and on the bed which he laid, was literally blind. he was also regularly swallowing blood, which..." So, yeah. Now, what exactly happened at this point? Well, all you need to know at this point is that Gage did survive all this with the assistance of his friend and the doctor. They shaved his scalp, then removed, you know, any coagulated blood or bone fragments and anything else that needed to be so that they could drain the wound. The entrance wound, the cheek was bandaged. A wet compress was applied, then a nightcap, then further bandaging to secure them. Later that evening, Harlow noted that Phineas Gage showed a clear mind, constant agitation of his legs being alternately retracted and extended. Says he does not care to see his friends as he shall be at work in a few days. So he ended up having to basically sort of stick around for a little while. And he did make a more or less full recovery, but despite the fact that he was fully conscious and more or less able to converse regularly and seemed by all manner and purposes to be perfectly fine, there was still some significant brain issues. Not that necessarily hurt with his speech or his ability to communicate or, you know, activate or just, you know, just operate as a normal human, but his personality basically changed. He originally had been a fairly jovial, kind of teetotaling frontiersman who then basically became a drunken lunatic who would basically cause fights wherever he went. Now, obviously, he was never able to regain his old job at the railroad and probably shouldn't have. So instead, what he did is he started taking part in touring carnival shows, specifically with... a little group you may have heard of called Barnum and Bailey's, where he would go around to like their freak shows and he would like work outside and he would like go around with his tamping iron and people would come in and he's like, "Hey, look at this. It went through my head. Any donations will be appreciated." But eventually he, did not, you know, eventually when he was in his mid-30s, he was drinking at a bar one day, and he suddenly fell to the ground, convulsed a bunch, and then died. So he continued to live for like another, I think it was like another 17, 18 years, where he did things like, I mentioned the freak show stuff. He also eventually made his way to Chile and became like a coachman. And you know, he did a lot of stuff. He actually managed to do a lot of things. But you know, eventually, you know, it did catch up with basically dying. But yeah, that was the story of Phineas Gage. It's one of those stories. And for the record, there's like a bunch of photographs of this guy. If you ever want to look him up, there's like a whole article about him on YouTube where there's a couple of pictures of him. one of the things you'll immediately notice is blind in one eye, because, you know, when that iron went up, it basically took out whatever nerve endings that were connected from his eyes to his brain. So his left eye is just completely shut. But otherwise, you know, it's just, it's a fascinating little story. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's toy.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. All right. So with that out of the way, it is now time to start the show proper. As always with the show, and don't expect anything funny this time, because this shit is dark. I'm just going to say it right off the beginning. The first thing is, we now know that the death toll in Gaza has officially surpassed 10,000.
Yeah. It's a lot of people, about half of its children.
Mm-hmm.
Entire families of dozens of people have been wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that, that's just awful to hear. Like, the closest thing we are to a ceasefire seems to be this humanitarian pause.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about where they get a handful of hours a day to get people out of the zones they're trying to bomb, which is just a very silly thing to think is a solution.
Mm-hmm.
As Israel continues attacking stuff, claiming that Hamas is there. So that, that, you know, explains everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was reading about a hospital, just snipers taking shots at people in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, killing patients, essentially.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, awful stuff to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 Not great.
And really nothing more to add to it. But then, all that, when it's at darkest, the House of Representatives decided to vote to censure the only Palestinian American in our Congress, Rashida Tlaib, for comments on the Israel-Hamas war.
Yeah.
Remember, she's not only Palestinian American, she has relatives in the Palestinian territories. Some of whom, and she's really not even sure if they're still alive. So,
yeah.
As you can imagine, she's going to have thoughts.
Yeah, and using the term from the river to the sea in this, which can be taken as a genocide call, but typically is not used that way.
Yeah.
If you are very much the GOP looking to spin anything into your favor, this is something you can definitely make a big deal. And of course, they had a number of Democrats vote for them. So,
about 20, I think it was.
Enough to get over the hump
to
do it. But obviously, this isn't formally doing anything. It's just to be like, shame on you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But it's not a great look to be doing this to the only Palestinian American in Congress as her people are being killed in droves in her homeland. So, yeah.
Mm.
Shows you everything that's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
The Zionism that is rampant. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm. Yep. But fortunately, as bad as all that is, we've or to sort of outweigh it, because we have our heroes of the week, and our heroes, because it was election week this week, and there was a bunch of races and amendments and plebiscites and whatever that were out and about, and we'll get started. We'll start off with, of course, Chris's state of Ohio. The big one, the one that everybody in the country was watching, and honestly, some folks outside of the country were watching. Ohio's issue one, which was to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution, passed by a clear majority.
Yeah. About 56.6%.
Mm-hmm.
I think just below the percentage that issue two got.
Yeah.
Though initially it was leading by a good like 8 to 10%, but obviously that's what happens when you get through the rest of the votes. A lot of that stuff's early votes.
Yep.
Stuff, but yeah, passed by a clear majority of we hadn't voted down the change to this whole process to require 60%. It would have failed. So
yeah,
great job for getting that shit to stop and be able to get this through. Though obviously the Ohio GOP is not taking this lying down. They're doing a lot of bluffing right now about what they want to do to stop this. But you know, this is a very clear thing that they can't stop, at least in the way that they are, everything's set up. So it's going to be require a lot of bullshit if they want to get what they're saying done, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon. But the let's see, the Ohio House Republican Communications team put out a press release with four quotes from four reps, Republican reps, that say a lot of weird shit about this.
Oh, yeah.
One here, Jennifer Gross, saying foreign billionaires don't get to make Ohio laws, which there wasn't that much foreign interference in this. It was mostly on the other side.
Yeah.
So there you go on that. Claiming there's foreign election interference, which no, there isn't.
No.
Representative Bill Dean here, issue one doesn't repeal a single Ohio law. In fact, it doesn't even mention one. The amendment's language is dangerously vague and unconstrained. It can be weaponized to attack parental rights or defend rapists, pedophiles, and human traffickers, which is amendments supersede all these laws.
Yeah.
That's what any future abortion laws are going to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the language is not that vague. So that's what they've been trying to say, is it takes away parental rights and all this. And it's like, no, it gives the people involved to have some rights to make their choices. So yeah, let's see. Melanie Miller here. We will continue to be a voice for every child in their mother's womb who cannot speak for themselves, which they're not children.
No.
Not until they're born. That's how it works. Okay,
they are... don't really give a shit after that point.
Yeah.
As to use them as pawns for whatever culture war bullshit they've got.
Yeah, if you want to be a voice for every child, how about free lunches and all that stuff?
Yeah. And of course, there was Ohio Governor Mr. Mark DeWine, who was DeWining.
Yeah. And yeah, the last one here, Beth Lear, is kind of the wildest. No amendment can overturn the God-given rights with which we were born. And it's like, oh, let's have a discussion about the Second Amendment.
Okay.
Like, no, that's, you know, a given right. Like, oh, okay, so God isn't involved in that then. The amendments are important. It's like, oh, you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm.
God's not involved in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're putting up a lot of bluster here. And
yeah.
We'll see what they actually end up trying to do.
And on top of all that, there was also legalizing recreational use in the state of Ohio. It also passed by a clear majority.
Yeah. This one has a little more room for fuckery because it's not an amendment or anything. It's a ballot initiative to essentially tell the House and Senate to pass this into law to legalize this. Yeah, that got 56.9%, just under 57%, a little bit more than abortion, which is interesting. But yeah, you can also see the counties that are all very much like just say no, that have extreme narc energy. So yeah, that's gonna be good. Because as much as I've seen people being like, oh, this is a travesty from big marijuana, and it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Literally, most of the big marijuana companies are run by old white rich men.
Yeah.
It's literally the same people you like for any other business in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And guess what? It's going to bring money into the state.
Yeah.
You're going to like that. More tax money.
Yeah. And then we go all the way to the state of Kentucky, where their governor, Andy Beshear, won re-election.
Yeah.
Yes.
By basically not dealing with any of the GOP's conspiracy bullshit.
Nope.
clearly talking about, you know, abortion rights and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And basically anybody that ran on clear abortion rights support won.
Yep.
In these elections.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that were against it that won were like the, what, the Moms for Liberty. They got like half of their people
mm-hmm.
won, which is pretty decent for the way that things would have gone.
Yeah.
You would think would have gone, but mm-hmm. a lot of people on the left ran for those races and won. Mm-hmm. So got a lot of communities in better shape than they could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. But yeah, Beshear ensures they'll have another Democrat governor for a few years. Cause he, I think, won in the special election. So this is mm-hmm. his first full term. So
yeah, first full term as governor.
That'll be great to see.
And then we go to the state of Virginia, where the Democrats won full control of the state legislature. And on top of that, Danica Rome became their first trans senator. So,
yeah. She was a state house rep
mm-hmm.
and managed to upgrade to the state senate. So, great job for her. And Virginia Democrats got back on their
mm-hmm.
The right side and pushed to get this done and managed to take advantage of the issues Youngkin has had.
Mm-hmm.
And he's basically saying he's not going to run for president because he, you know, wants to ensure that he, you know, has control here.
Mm.
Doesn't just give it away to a Democrat governor, you know, in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you see his messaging changing to be like, well, I'll work across the aisle now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, because you have to get anything passed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they got the majority here. I don't know what the specific number is, but mm-hmm. yeah, they have control of both parts and they'll be able to keep the bad stuff from happening. So
mm-hmm.
that's good.
But basically, the sort of theme here is that GOP basically got shellacked in just about all of these. Wherever abortion was on the ballot, they basically lost very badly.
Yep.
Yeah.
Their coddling of the evangelical crowd is going to be their undoing.
Yeah. And they are in a panic right now because they know what the solution is, but they cannot allow themselves to say it out loud because they really are attached at the hip to the evangelical crowd and they can't let them go.
Yep.
Because if they do, that may very end of the GOP know it. As a political party, end up going the way of the Whigs. But anyway, yeah, so that's happening. But we still got some other stuff here. We got Philadelphia elected its very first woman mayor.
Their 100th mayor is their first woman mayor, so that's
mm-hmm.
great for Sherelle Parker here.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. And we also got Rhode Island elected a black member to Congress.
Yep. Their first black member to Congress, which is not surprising, but also, yeah, Gabe Amo, he's their first black representative in Congress, so that's great mm-hmm. to see. Yeah, son of Ghanaian, I don't know how to pronounce that, and Liberian immigrants, so he'll definitely bring some more perspectives in Congress, so. There you go. That's great to see. And also, yeah, one of the younger ones at 35. So more young people in Congress as we need
Please.
It.
Please.
Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, we got this exonerated member of the Central Park Five, Yusuf Salam, won his New York City Council seat.
Yep. Great news for him. As he represents the Central Harlem District on the City Council.
Mm-hmm.
Ran unopposed. So that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. People maybe don't realize when they vote, you don't have to vote, even if it's an unopposed running. You can just not vote for that person if you really don't want to. They'll still win, but you don't have to have that on your not really record, but, you know, on your
conscience.
Yeah, conscience. So,
yeah.
Hey, great for him. He'll be able to help out his community.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, for our Heroes of the Week, we got people of St. Louis Park, Minnesota, the very first in the country to elect a Somali American for mayor.
Yeah. At least that's what is believed to be. It's not maybe something you can go through the entire history of every community, but 27-year-old Nadia Muhammad was chosen to lead St. Louis Park, so that's great. A smaller community, so that's good for her. She got 58% of the vote, defeating retired banker Dale A. Anderson. He only got 41% of the vote, so... Yeah, she's been serving on city council since she was elected at age 23, so definitely getting in there as a younger person.
Yeah.
So that's cool. So yeah, there you go. That's it for all the voting results news.
Yeah. And so that is it for the show proper. We're now moving on. Proper show proper, and we started off with the news that the federal government is going to be shutting down in a week, and there's no site with the new speaker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is next Friday.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're very much still having issues getting a bill. They may have one that might be going through that's just a basic CR bill or continuing resolution of what they passed last time in all that chaos of McCarthy and that. So may just be punting it for a little bit further down the road as they're trying to get stuff done. But yeah, this is unsurprising. And of course, Johnson's like, I didn't start this, so I shouldn't take any heat on this. So yeah, we'll see if there's any fallout once they do get one past, but yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. So yeah, we're gonna see. Last I heard, the reason it fell through is because there was an argument over whether or not they should allow discrimination against people who use birth control. Yeah, because that's where the situation has degenerated. But yeah. Another political news. Guess what, folks? She's back. Jill Stein is running once again for president with the Green Party.
Yeah, she needs to go fuck off.
Please. I'm begging.
Yeah. Didn't they, like, find some sort of connection between her and something absolutely horrible?
Yeah, she was getting money from...
Yeah, from the Russians.
Yep.
So, yeah. And now, you know, 8 years after the last time she was a notable part of the election cycle, she is now 73 and adding to the, you know, band of old fucks that are part of all this. But she is going to definitely be the odd person out, as she ran on rotten policies last time, and I'm sure they have not improved at all for this. So yeah, she's going to be around. And oh yeah, she's Jewish, in case you can't tell from her name. She's probably going to talk about that shit with Israel and Gaza and all that. So that's going to be fun if she's in part of any debates, which I don't know that she will.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Yeah. And then we have this news. Joe Manchin not running for re-election.
Yeah. Finally getting the fuck out of here, but also
almost certainly handing the state over to the Republicans.
Yeah, as he loves to be a contrarian when he can be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly a way to do that. But he also essentially left the Democrat Party or something like that, or like had his one leg step, you know, out of the door.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, I'll do it. I'll do it. But yeah.
Yeah.
So you can fuck off for all we really care.
Yeah. And now for this other one. For those of you who don't know, a lot of our, you know, our nominations and confirmations for heads of our military are basically being kept from happening because of a single senator, Mr. Tommy Tuberville. who has basically objected to every single one because he's being, I mean, let's be completely honest. He doesn't really care. It's just, it's what he's been ordered to do.
Yeah.
And so the senators have now proposed a temporary rule to just get around this guy's blockade because he's seriously hampering shit.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been blocking hundreds of military promotions for the last 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Due to policy stuff involving assistance for abortion care.
Mm-hmm.
He's blocked more than 370 appointments so far and a number of leadership parts of the various branches are not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially people are being run into the ground of overworkage. They mentioned one here, Marine Corps Commandant General Eric Smith, who suffered an apparent heart attack after working overtime amid the nomination blockade.
Mm-hmm.
Where he, the quote they have here, he said he's working from 5:30 in the morning until 11:30 at night because he was doing two jobs, including that of his deputy. And it's like, that's fucked up shit to be doing to these people. But yeah, this rule change they're looking at, let me see here. Yeah, see, Senate rules allow Tuberville to hold up nominations all by himself, but a small group of senators introduced a measure that would allow most military promotions to be approved as a group or on block with a simple majority vote. The measure would need to be approved by a rules committee before coming up for a vote in the full Senate, where we need 60 votes to pass. Yeah, the Senate doesn't have time to start from the beginning of, you know, running through all of these appointments to approve. Even if someone got him to back down, there's a spending bill deadline to consider as well. So there's a lot of important stuff, but this is something that, you know, for somebody that supposedly cares about the military, is definitely not doing anything that benefits us as things are not going great in, you know, the Ukraine and Israel. So these are things that he is just continuing to be an asshole about. As a, and they have a quote here from a CNN thing he did recently where he compares it to being a football coach, saying, I coached for a long time. I think 15 or 20 coaches. I mean, you can only do so much. You got to give responsibility. I'm sure that's what they're doing as far as delegating work to different people that are still there. And it's like, yeah, that's not a good reason to do any of this shit. Let's see. Yeah, shifting the blame to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, saying it was his job to get people ready. And it's like, he can only do that for the people that are getting their promotions mm-hmm. to fill the jobs that are needed.
Yeah.
And some of these people are running close to or past deadlines for getting the promotion
mm-hmm.
Before they are forced to stop working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're specifically doing in some of these cases, if they have their underlings are taking on multiple jobs and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's fucked up shit he's been doing, and hopefully we can get some sort of temporary role so we can actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
So that would help.
Yeah. All right. And next we got some really good news. SAG-AFTRA has approved a deal with the AMA to end its strike. So the strike with SAG-AFTRA is officially over.
Yeah, they'll be voting to approve it
mm-hmm.
For that. That will, let's see, that'll be probably around this weekend. So, yeah, we'll see mm-hmm. how that goes, but should be getting approved. Let's see, the deal includes a streaming participation bonus that will, you know, get them more money as their shows do well.
Mm-hmm.
The contract is worth more than $1 billion in total. But yeah, most of the minimums increased by at least 7%, 2% above the increases received by the mm-hmm. WGA and Directors Guild. So the people at the very bottom are going to get some noticeable bumps in pay for the jobs they get. So yeah, this will help also dealing with the AI bullshit that the MPTP tried to throw in there at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
To try to allow them to just scan a bunch of low-level actors to use as they want in future projects without having to pay them again.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, that's a shitty thing to do.
Yep.
There's a few examples we've seen of this stuff. It looks like the crowd in like a PS2 basketball game or something like mm-hmm. that, which is like worse than what you would normally have to do, which is just pay people
mm-hmm.
to sit in crowds and shit. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And we got this bit of news. There will be a debt rising subscribers starting in December. So yeah, if you got Disney Plus and Hulu, you can go ahead and get them in one place.
Yeah, this is a little bit weird. I think you have to have the specific bundle for both these versus, mm-hmm. like I technically have both, but that's through a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this would work for me, but I don't know. But yeah, they're putting a beta version of this app in December, so that if you have both, you'll get all the content from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume I don't know which bundle this is, if this is the ones with ads or no ads, but I assume it'll deal with that appropriately, though. Yeah, I have Hulu with ads and Disney Plus without ads, so I don't know. But yeah, another thing you might have to pay attention to. So I guess this deals with the ones that are with ads for both for $10 a month or $20 without ads. So I don't know. They're both not good apps either way.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's going to really change anything. It's going to change the player. Yeah, on Disney Plus, if I'm watching on the web version, the newer shows that are going up, every week or whatever, randomly when I try to play it, it'll hit the Disney Plus logo and then just stop as the end of that animation goes. I'll have to reload that page again. It's a weird bug that's been there for years. And it's like, all right, this thing just sucks. That's why I don't want to pay $20 a month or whatever for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I pay $5 for Hulu and Disney Plus. So that's where I'm at with that. So yeah, there you go. I have one less app to deal with that, though they're putting a lot of shows on both, so
mm-hmm.
kind of there, getting there anyway.
Yeah, and now going from one mega, Warner Brothers Discovery just did something else. They've done this a few times before, and it's been infuriating every single time. And they just did it again. They recently canned a new movie that finished filming back last year called Coyote versus Acme. It was basically a movie where Wile E. Coyote was going to bring a lawsuit against Acme Incorporated because he kept trying to use all their products to capture the Roadrunner, and they keep backfiring on him.
Yeah.
John Cena was going to be in it. It wasn't a guarantee that the movie was successful, but once again, all that work has essentially been thrown in the garbage.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what all they needed to do still with it, but I think they were finished with all the live action parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this was going to be like a new age. What's the Disney movie that has all that mixed up stuff?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Yeah. Like that, like a modern version of that. That could be pretty cool, especially because I didn't know this was based off of an article that came out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially presented this as like a fun idea,
yeah,
for a thing, and they licensed that for it. Doesn't seem like it was that expensive as a movie, like
no.
$30 million for it.
I've heard people say that this has something to do with the whole Discovery merger that they did. Some kind of I don't know what it is, but for whatever reason, they're canning these movies left and right to get the tax write offs and.
Yeah,
it's like, are they really that deep in the red? Like, what's the issue here?
Yeah, I don't know that it's that kind of stuff. It's more thinking this isn't going to be a huge seller
mm-hmm.
for anything. Like, they even had offers for licensing it to other distribution companies.
Yeah,
to do that kind of stuff, and like thinking that stuff isn't worth it, so it's better to take this tax write-off and potentially get like $30 million for that to make back on it, and versus, you know, putting it out there and potentially having it fail or become a cult hit or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like it's this weird, you know, late capitalism thing of, you know, min-maxing this whole process as much as possible in a way that you just don't really get to see any of this shit. So like they did that with the Batgirl movie that was supposedly bad, but who knows? Cause
yeah, we'll never know because they decided to bury it.
Yeah. And the weird thing is also that one of the people working on this movie as a producer is James Gunn. Mm-hmm. Current person who's sort of at the head of their new DC Studios initiative. So it's like, all right, this seems like a weird thing to do to a project that, you know, one of your biggest execs is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like, all right, well, this seems like a very short-sighted maneuver, but that's the sort of person you're paying like $200 million a year to do this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's... It seems really dumb, but whatever.
Yeah. Let's see. And then we found out this week, actually just a couple of days ago, Nintendo is a action film based on The Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, going for live action versus the CG stuff they did for Mario.
Yeah.
And this goes through... What company is this? They just mentioned Avi Arad, a producer who's... produced a bunch of stuff. And the director would be Wes Ball, who just got, you know, announced as the director of Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. They got a big trailer there. That was one of the trailers that was ahead of the Marvels. So certainly an up and coming person as far as big movies. So that could potentially be a good thing, but also, yeah, just kind of an interesting idea, especially live action where, that could go bad if they don't find the right people and writers and all that in production. So, but if the, you know, Miyamoto's working on this, so we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, I mean, the Mario Bros. Animated film ended up being really good, so.
Yeah.
You know.
We'll see how this one goes, and. Whether they're going to be like Amazon and just put a shitload of money into it, maybe it'll work out, but maybe we'll just go more reasonable and see how that goes. Maybe get more of like the way the One Piece stuff went for Netflix, which did really well.
Yeah. And next up, we got this. Netflix's Three Body Problem will debut on...
Oh, you're missing one, Brandon.
Oh, I'm missing one. Yeah. Speaking of the Super Mario Brothers movie, that's going to be debuting on Netflix on December 3rd. So,
yeah, now you might be able to watch it on a service you have.
Yep.
Instead of Peacock.
Yeah.
Which I had, but that's also because I got a year for $20.
Or you, you know, bought it on Blu-ray like I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. Definitely check it out.
Yeah. And going back to what I was talking about, Netflix's Three Body Problem, maybe March 21st, 2024. I'm interested to see how they did this because. I've read The Three Body Problem, and it is a brain bender of a book with some really complicated, high-concept sci-fi involved. So,
yeah, and part of their Geek Tweak thing that they had, they put up a clip so that you can look at that in the article here. And I'm like, okay, there's like a weird VR thing. And the guy like puts, is like, grabbing at some dirt on the ground and like tastes it to be like, oh, I can taste it. And then gets hit from behind with something. I don't know. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yep.
I don't know. But yeah, the first eight episodes will be out in March. So we'll see. Probably see more trailers and see more stuff that will give us a better idea of what's going on versus all the weird stuff they've been showing. Oh, yeah. You get the one guy from Game of Thrones that I think everybody liked.
Yeah.
Getting to be kind of a star on this show.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool.
And we got news that Netflix's Arcane Season 2 will premiere in November 2024. So yeah, that first season, on top of being amazing, was also ended on just a gut punch of a cliffhanger. So yeah.
See, that seems like they're getting all the voice talent back and all that. So that's cool.
Yeah. but yeah, that it looks like from the little bit that they have showed, this seems to be implying that this is like the actual like war between Piltdown and the Nation of Zom is starting again for real. so yeah, we'll see that. And now we got just a crap load of trailers to go through. First and foremost, we got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Yeah. Doing more of this after the last one did pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't even seen that yet, so. But yeah, this will be out. When is it?
Mm-hmm.
Some point. I don't know why they're not listing a date here. Might be at the end of this trailer. Wait. It just says coming soon. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, they're back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Doing Ghostbusters shit after the summer is being interrupted by this big ice storm thing that's going on with the new ghost thing that's taken over. So that could be neat. It has all the kids from the first one, the previous one, and Paul Rudd and the other Ghostbuster, the old Ghostbusters and all that. So, yeah, going to be a lot of stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yep. And we also got a teaser trailer too. Yep, they making a sequel.
Yeah, Inside Out 2. That'll be out in June. In case you're wondering how cutthroat this is, I believe... what's her name is in this? Let's see. Who's yeah, Amy Poehler's back. She got a good payday, but yeah, I think the two other stars from the last one got offered like 5% of what she was getting, and so they didn't return. So they're like some turnover with some of the voice actors, but that's kind of the shitty part of this. But yeah, the new thing is the kid is getting older as a teenager. And a new emotion gets installed, anxiety. Played by Maya Hawke. So that seems like a pretty good idea for a sequel. There's a teenage girl with anxiety problems. So yeah, there you go.
Yep. And we got a teaser trailer for Netflix. Is Avatar The Last Airbender. They're a live-action adaptation that, even from the beginning, is already superior to that M. Night Shyamalan abomination.
Yeah. Knowing nothing about any of this, it looks pretty decent. At least the kid actually looks like how they're supposed to. And the comparisons I've seen of other characters, it looks like they're doing a pretty good job on that stuff. So we'll see how that all goes, but the people that are a big fan of that show seem to be pretty positive on this. So, yeah, that'll be sometime next year.
Also, the fact that they, like, got actual, you know, Asian people play the Asian characters.
Yeah.
Instead of that whitewashed atrocity that M. Night Shyamalan put out.
Yeah.
Where, weirdly enough, the Fire Nation was made up entirely of South Asian actors. Which is weird because M. Night Shyamalan himself is South Asian.
Yeah.
That whole thing was that shit is a fever dream, I swear.
Yeah, that's what Hollywood was at that point.
Yeah. And we also got a teaser trailer for Ultraman Rising.
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty not a property I've had too much interest in, but they're kind of in the mix of the kaiju genre in Japan of sorts. And I don't think that many of those shows or movies have come over here too much. This is the newest one where Ken Sato, who turns into Ultraman, is also a baseball superstar and has some big attack happen as he's about to play a game. So I guess this is not a secret thing of his. But yeah, this is coming from the director and co-director from Kubo and the Two Strings.
Mm-hmm.
So the art style is really good in this.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the it seems like the whole thing is that Ken Sato sort of manages to procure an egg from this beast that he has killed that hatches a baby that imprints on him.
Mm-hmm.
And so dealing with being what they call a monster daddy and being, you know, Ultraman while also dealing with a weird kaiju baby. So that's pretty neat. So yeah, that'll be out next year.
Yeah. And we got a teaser trailer for Netflix's The Witcher, Sirens of the Deep, which is a animated Witcher story this time around.
Yeah, I think they did one a couple years ago, anime, one of these, and this is a new one featuring a lot of underwater stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say they have the actual voice actor for Geralt in this one, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty neat. That'll be out late next year.
Mm.
So yeah, looks neat, but it's him doing a lot of weird underwater shit.
Mm-hmm.
Which could go either way. Yeah. Yeah, they've done so many of these like side shows. They're like a half, like 50-50 shot of it being good.
Yeah.
Or not. Not quite as successful as the main live action show.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go.
And we got a teaser trailer for live action adaptation of Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah, yep. This looks pretty promising. The
the
actors they got look all pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
For Yusuke and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this being like a teaser trailer kind of jumps through a bunch of stuff and seems to suggest that they're going to get to Togoro pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, great part of the original show is they kind of don't necessarily focus on like world ending stuff for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's just Yusuke kind of dying, coming to terms with what happened and trying to earn his right back to the living world. And then kind of having a little bit of a slice of life kind of thing while dealing with demons and such every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
As he kind of gets more powerful with his new abilities.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And, but yeah, Togoro looks a little bit weird because you can't do that kind of freaky character, justice with the live action.
Mm-hmm.
But they get to do with those weird glasses. Mm-hmm. That's pretty built. So,
yeah.
Though he's also got the little weird dude on his shoulder. So that's the weird thing.
Mm hmm.
But yeah, this could be neat. Want to see more of it. But yeah, that's supposed to be starting December 14th. So if we see some more clips of that, that'll let us get a better idea of how that looks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, looks pretty good. So there you go.
Yeah. And we also got an official trailer for Mean Girls. It's not just a remake, it's a musical.
Yeah, it's weird. It's Mean Girls, but based on the musical, which is still Mean Girls.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's kind of a remake of the original, especially at the start. They're like, this isn't your mother's Mean Girls. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing to people here?
Mm-hmm.
This movie, the original movie's not that old. To be like, this ain't your mom's Mean Girls. So yeah, that's a, looks pretty good. It'll be out January 12th. Tina Fey and what's his name? Tim. Crap, they don't have his name here, do they? Yeah, the principal and the teacher return from the original movie. Tina Fey wrote it, so that's not too surprising. But they got new teenage girls to be all the leads in this. The one girl you might recognize is the voice behind Moana, Ali Carvalho. So that's cool. She gets to be one of the popular girls. So, yeah. This looks like it'd still be pretty fun. It just looks like it's more of like the edgy version of the original, where they curse some more and all that. So, and lean into the like more open sexuality stuff that schools can dip into now versus what they were like 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And as well as a lot of like TikTok and social media stuff here.
Yeah.
It looks like it'd still be pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
But not something we really needed.
No. I mean, if you wanted to go watch Mean Girls, watch Mean Girls.
Yeah. Yeah,
it still holds up really well.
I mean, it's 20 years old, and yet it's still just as funny now as it was back then.
Yeah.
And finally, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Netflix, My Life with Walter Royce.
Yeah, this is based on a popular, like, teen book series. So, yeah, it's, but also, yeah, from the producers of The Kissing Booth, which is a popular Netflix show or movie. So, yeah, based on the popular Wattpad novel by Ali Novak. So, yeah, one of those kind of, I don't know about rom-com kind of things, but it's about a girl that lost her parents in a tragic accident and moves to the countryside from New York City to rural Colorado and kind of moves in with the family that takes her in and deals with the country life of sorts and how that all goes and as a high school girl. So looks neat. That'll be out December 7th. So about a month from now. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And yeah, so I do believe that's going to give us a show. Yep. That's going to be a show for us, folks. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, or something you want to air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for you on the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans. Tune in, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or, you know, any kind of podcast aggregator you can really think of. And if there isn't one yet, or it's one, just wait a few minutes. We'll be on there eventually. But until then, I would like to thank you for listening to us, and I would like to thank Chris and Teresa for joining me once again. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everyone. Because, you know, we're not in the splash zone, so why should we care? But yes, please do spread the word. We always are looking for new. So, with that, we're going to go ahead and bring this to a close. We will see you all next week. And it's going to be colder than a witch's tit by that time. So, I hope y'all are all bundled up. Bye.